The Give Back Model is a podcast where I'll be having conversations with entrepreneurs who have successfully built charitable giving into the heart of their business models. It's important to note that every entrepreneur will have their own model and they're on their own unique journeys of giving back. I'm Christine Petrella, and throughout this podcast, I'll talk with entrepreneurs who have figured out the right way to team up with charitable organizations and some entrepreneurs who have that heart and are ready to give back and they're at the start of their journey. I'll also sprinkle in some quick talk with business owners whose give back comes in ways of hosting special events, employee-driven volunteer work, or special business incentives with a large charitable donation at the end. All right, today I am chatting with Alan Donegan, who in the Petrella household is a legend. And I know I've said this to you before, but we think you are just the coolest human being out there. You are the co-founder of the Pop-Up Business School. Alan, thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. I'm so excited to be here. And congratulations on the new podcast and launching and getting it out there. It's incredible.
Thank you. Well, I practice by listening to you and the Rebel Entrepreneurs. I'm taking notes for sure. Now, Alan, where in the world are you? Every time I talk to you, I feel like you're somewhere else.
I'm in Oaxaca in Mexico, eating all of the mole sauce that I possibly can and just enjoying the sunshine in the mountains.
Oh, goodness. How long have you been there?
About a week. So we spent 2 months on the beach in Puerto Vallarta. And before that, we were on heavy lockdown in Germany, in the cold of East Germany in the snow. So my life has changed dramatically over the last 2 months.
Polar opposites. I want to dive in and talk about the theory of, is it possible to start that business, not go into debt, and do good and give back? Is that possible, Alan?
Well, I've managed to do it, which if some random British man from England can do it, then I like to think other people can do it as well. So the biggest misconception for me is people think that making money and doing good are the opposites. And if I want to do good, I need to take a job with a charity and not make any money. And if I want to build a business, then I need to be a sleazy corporate, like take the cash, all that stuff. And I think part of it is based on the belief that business is a zero-sum game. And what I mean by zero-sum game is for me to get ahead, you go further down. And if I win, you lose. And there's always a zero sum. Someone wins, someone loses. And that's kind of the opposite of what I've found in business. I found it's not a zero-sum game. Actually, if I can help you win, we win together. And if I can help my clients win and the people who come on my courses win, we all win together. And I think there is a way to make money, have fun, and do good all at the same time.
And that's really special to be able to help people retrain their brain and retrain what we've been doing or what we've been taught for so long is that you have that business plan, you're going to that bank and you're taking out that loan. And this is just the way it's got to be. I got to wear a suit to work and this is how it's going to go. So you kind of took that, ripped it all up and started your pop-up business school. So tell me a little bit more about your pop-up business school.
So I started it for several reasons, actually two main reasons. One was my dad was an entrepreneur. He racked up a huge amount of debt and he gambled the family home against his business and lost. And at that point, I was living in the family home with my little brother and my mum. And it's a little bit awkward when the bank tries to take away the home you live in. And I spent a long time protecting the family home, fighting against it. So I saw how debt can cause huge problems and pains in families. Like it can rip your family apart. If you go into debt and gamble your family on a business idea, like that's a risky way of doing business. And that led me to never want to do it myself. So when I came to starting my own business and I went to the British government for support, they offered this free support. They gave me three workshops, how to write a business plan, super exciting, funding, which is just a code word for debt, and marketing. And they did more to put me off starting a business than they did actually to help me. And that experience, it basically left me lost. Because I didn't want to borrow money to start my business. I didn't want to go down the route my dad had gone down. I didn't want to risk my house, go into debt. That stuff scared me. I saw the pain and the damage it caused. So it left me with the question, there must be a better way, which I then went and worked to find a better way for me. I built a training business and I started making good money. And then I decided, well, I should teach other people this. And I think I was still slightly angry at the British government for their lack of quality support. So I decided I would do my best to give a better version. And I have this line about changing the way entrepreneurship is taught, because I believe in nearly all places it is taught backwards. If you Google, how do I start a business? The number one article that comes up doesn't mention sales. And I'm like, how can you start a business without selling something? I get very confused at that. And yeah, I just think entrepreneurship is taught backwards all around the world, specifically America, the UK. Well, actually, everywhere you go, it's taught backwards. And I'm on a mission to change that, Christine. I'm going to change that around the world and help people make money, do something they love, and have a bit more fun.
Yeah. And that's frustrating. I mean, I can feel the frustration where you learned from, you know, the mistakes that have been made, you know, with your father. And then you go to your government, who you just want to trust will support and help you and give you the right answers. And they give you the same kind of plan that, you know, you knew wasn't working. What's brilliant here is that you are able to say, here's the problem. And let me now go on my journey to solve that problem. So I think with a lot of entrepreneurs, they say, how can I do that business? And how can I also give back? So what's some advice you have for those entrepreneurs?
Let's start right at the top. The way to get wealthy in life is to help other people. There's this classic quote from Zig Ziglar that says, if you help enough other people get what they want, you can have anything you want in life. And that has 100% been my experience of the world. And I believe that every business, I don't care what you do, helps other people. Apple, like, they sell iPhones that help you stay connected, sort your photos, do these amazing things. A cake business. I love cake businesses. They make my life better. They also make me slightly fatter, but let's not go there. Every business, I don't care what it is. An artist brightens people's homes. A cleaner allows you to live in a wonderful environment without having to do the hard work. Every business helps other people improve their world. And that's basically what you've got to find, is how do I make the world? If that sounds very grand, and it can be on a micro level, like you're improving one person's life somehow, but how do I make the world a slightly better place and then charge for it? That's basically it. And that's what I've been doing for the last 12, 13, 14 years. And Pop-Up Business School, we've just rebranded to Rebel Business School. It's very exciting. And that's been going for about 9 years now. And people always, like, Alan, you teach people how to do entrepreneurship. So basically, we do 2-week-long courses on how to build a business. And the courses are completely free, Christine. No one has ever paid to come on one of our pop-up events. And people always go, well, how's that possible? Like, how do you make money? You're doing this, you're giving it away. And the simple answer is, we get someone with money to pay. And I kind of like to call it the Robin Hood business model. We don't actually steal, though. We just ask politely. Honesty, trust, integrity, all that jazz is very good.
Thank you for clarifying.
So we go to councils and housing authorities and corporate sponsors, and we ask them to sponsor events for the people who need it the most. And they pay us to give our services away to the people who need it the most. And it's a really interesting business model. And I think there are so many ways to make money and do good. We just need to get creative.
So the students who are coming to the school and signing up for the school, where are they in their journey of entrepreneurship?
So it's interesting you ask that. We've just been completing a 5-year longitudinal study, which is a fancy way of saying tracking people over 5 years. So we ran 5 events in this place called Barnet, the London Borough of Barnet, over 5 years, 1 a year over 5 years. And then after the last event, about a year later, we went back to everyone and said, how's it going? What happened? Did you survive? And we found that when people came to our course, At the time of starting, 40% were unemployed. So in terms of the starting point, people were starting quite a long way back. There was a bunch of people who'd already started their businesses, but they weren't particularly making money. And I'm sure you've met plenty of entrepreneurs who start a business and then for a couple of years, they make a sale here and a sale there. And technically they're in business, but they've made $20 or actually lost $100, depending on what they did to start up. And then you help them over those courses in that period. And I think of the 380 people that came along, we started 122 businesses. And of those 122 businesses, 75% were still trading 5 years later, which if you compare that to the success rate of the startup loan scheme, which lends people money to build a business because you obviously need money. It takes money to make money. You obviously need money to start a business. They have a 40% default rate. So if you take one of their loans, like that doesn't mean your business is not died. That just means you've defaulted on the loan. So there'll be a bunch of people who've businesses don't work and they've still paid the loan back. But these are people who've completely defaulted on the loan. So we have a far higher success rate without using debt than people who are lending money to help people start businesses. And I think that says a huge amount. Well, it does to me anyway.
Right. And that's what we've been taught. It takes money to make money. And again, you're saying, whoop. That's not the case. So have you had to have any of those tough conversations where you're talking with a student and you say, listen, I think this might be a hobby and not something that you need to pursue full time. It's just not working the way you're working.
Yes, several awkward conversations. And sometimes you can find a way to flex. Sometimes you're like, you need to stop this immediately. And I remember we did a project in a market in East London and two of the businesses there, I was hired to coach a range of these businesses. So I went in, spoke to them. And two particularly, I always like to ask the questions of sort of, oh, how many sales are you making? Where are you going? What are you doing? What's the profitability like? And sort of you dig in a bit and actually you find out after a while that this one particular business, a flower business, she was not paying her rent and losing money every month. And she'd been open for a year or so. And I just look at it going, well, there's stuff we can do to increase sales. There's stuff we can do this, but really, like, get out of this market. It's dragging you down. Find a different way to do it. And I think entrepreneurs quite often don't know enough about the numbers. They're passionate about the flowers, the product, the thing, but they forget to look at how much it costs and what's the price. And, well, my family did this. My family ran a pub for some time, a pub in England, and my dad got very excited and did a deal to expand the pub. He raised the overheads massively because it was all redesigned. They took on extra loans. The amount of money they borrowed was ridiculous. So they had a huge amount to pay back. And the sales didn't go up commensurate to the amount that they had to pay back. And then over the next year or so, they were gradually going further and further and further into debt until eventually my mum went, we can't keep doing this. If you don't know your numbers, you can't tell if you're making profit and you might actually be sending yourself into debt. And I think most people's financial strategy is to stick their head in the sand and go, it'll be okay, just keep selling.
Yeah. And you're teaching us the opposite. We need that. And one of my favorite stories, you know, that you've gotten into was the couple who had the escape room. And they just took that pop-up that you teach. I feel like they took that and ran with it and they did it the right way. So they started very small with the pop-up. Let's try here in the, what was it, a basement bar that they did the first one?
They did it in a basement bar in Reading for a couple of days and just tested it and went, actually, this was fun. They lost money on that first gig, but they could see how they could make money if they did it slightly longer than 2 days. And then they thought, well, how can we get a free building? And they took this idea that we talk about of borrowing space. And they went around the local town asking every place that had a spare space, can you lend us a room? We're going to do an escape room. Can you lend us a room? And they spent the entire day being rejected, Christine. Everyone said no until dejected. They were just about to head back to the car and they saw one last space. And this last space was a hotel called Great Expectations.
Oh, yes.
You cannot make this stuff up.
Yep.
And they went into Great Expectations. It's a sort of hotel in Reading. And they said, they did their pitch, can we borrow a space? And the guy said, yeah, funny enough, we've got a room we don't know what to do with. And the hotel lent them that space because it would bring more people into the hotel bars, into the restaurants. They did this deal. They got the space for free. They sold the tickets. They did a 6-week pop-up event where they didn't have to pay for the venue, which is huge. And they made enough money to be able to put down the deposit and get into their first full-time building. Now they've built up 3-4 escape rooms. They built up a great business, or at least they did until the pandemic. And now they're trying to recover from that. I've just seen the post. They're reopening again now. But yeah, like everyone else, they're trying to bounce back. But the biggest thing I think for them is they've survived the pandemic because they didn't have debt. So they didn't have a loan they had to keep repaying. They didn't have something that they had to take a loan to survive that pandemic period. They were able to hunker down. Yes, they weren't bringing in money, but yes, they weren't losing a significant amount of money with debt. And now they're bouncing back the other side. And yeah, if you're in Reading in England and listening to this, go and support Katie and Andrew. Go to the escape room. It's actually brilliant. I've been to all of them so far.
If we are able to make that trip ever again, if they let us leave this country, Tony and I will be there in a heartbeat. We would love to support them and see what they've done. So the pandemic, and you mentioned that, I talked with an entrepreneur the other day who saw the pandemic for their business as kind of an opportunity to get frozen food out. And it's really neat. So this business actually, they're called Sukasa here in Richmond. And what they do is they sell frozen food, burritos and mole bowls, and you would love it. And they've kind of taken that frozen food mentality to the next level. I mean, the food is just absolutely delicious. And what they do is for every burrito they sell or every item they sell, they donate a burrito to a local organization. So, you know, a church or homeless shelter, someone that they're partnering with. And so they were able to kind of take the pandemic and morph their company into something that can continue to thrive through the delivery business. So can you talk to me a little bit about how entrepreneurs are adapting to the pandemic? Are there ones who just had to completely stop and say this, I just can't do this? Or were there ones that were able to morph that business into something that is continuing to sustain what they need to do to keep going?
Well, I think it's really challenging and it's different for every business. We have a lovely lady that we helped start a business in Kent called Joanna. She's the bra boss of Kent and she does bra fittings. Obviously, those aren't really socially distanced.
Do you have to get pretty close there?
Yeah, fairly close to be able to help with that one. And the pandemic really knocked her business for six. And then you've got a decision of what to do next. How do I react? How do I respond? What do I do? And I think the message I would have for everyone here is problems are going to happen. Problems are a sign you are alive. There is only one group of people who don't have any problems and they're in the morgue. They're already dead. Everyone else has problems, crises, things go on. I still have them. And you think, well, you're successful. You don't have any problems anymore. And actually what happens is as you get more successful, the universe goes, you've got some skills. Let me throw more problems at you and see how you can do. And it's not that you won't have problems or crises. It's how you respond to them and it's how you react. And I think what I say to everyone out there is stuff is going to happen. It's thinking about what do I do next? So I kind of now have this thing of take a deep breath, relax, maybe get yourself a coffee or a cold drink or whatever it is. Take a moment and then go, okay, let's define the problem. What just happened? From that problem, let's turn it into a question. So the pandemic just happened. It shut down all my face-to-face business. So the question might be, how do we react or how do I survive? How do I still create income? I can't see people face to face. How do I generate sales online? I can't do this. How do I do this? And then you get a forward focused question, which leads you towards some solutions, which will be able to drive your business forwards. And the one thing I say to everyone is this pandemic is not the last problem we will face. There's going to be another one and another one and another one. And it's developing the thought process of, okay, let's have a seat, define the problem, work out what to do next and keep going. As entrepreneurs, you are going to have many problems. Like it seems to happen every 1 to 2 years in my own business. The universe, the government, the world likes to send me some kind of issue to deal with and test me.
Of course, nature, they're sending us some fun things to deal with right now.
Yes.
I want to go back to the florist, the flower shop. And you had mentioned a word that I hear from every entrepreneur I speak with, and it's passion. So how do I take my passion and turn that into a business? What do I need to have besides that passion to take those next steps?
I'm going to back up one moment just slightly before that, because lots of people go, Alan, I don't have a passion. Like, I don't know what I'm passionate about. So step one, you won't know what you're passionate about until you try stuff. So get out there and try things, test things, do it. And every time you test something and you don't like it, that's knocking one off the list and you are making further forward progress. And eventually you'll find one that you go, oh, this feels good. And actually, passion quite often comes when you've done it for a while, you've developed some skills, you're starting to get some mastery, and then you're like, oh, this is it. This is what I want to do. But you will never find your passion unless you try it. I think lots of times people get this advice of, I should sit still and meditate until my passion comes to me. There will be doves flying above and a sign will come from the universe. And that's a load of rubbish. Just try some stuff and see what happens. So step one, try some stuff, find out what you enjoy. Step two, once you found you enjoy it, start to dive into a bit more, find more about it. Step three is run a mini experiment. Which for us, the concept of a mini experiment is, I've got an idea for a business. I've got an idea for something. I'm going to try it. And my mini experiment is no debt. I'm just going to ask some people to buy. Because what's the only way to know if your business idea will be successful or not?
Try it.
Yeah. And I think people see try it as I'm going to do a market survey. And actually, if you go back to the general advice and you look on those websites that say how to start a business, it says conduct market research, which I have a bit of a problem with, because if you go up to someone and say, what do you think of my idea? Lots of people will be nice to you because they don't want to hurt your feelings. And that's not helpful feedback.
That's a great point.
Maybe not in New York, but in the rest of the world, they don't want to hurt your feelings. They just a bit nice. Yeah, looks lovely. And then you go, would you buy it? And you go, yeah, sure. And they go, would you buy it for $20? And you go, yeah, sure. And is that good feedback? No, because when it actually comes to it and you go, look, I've got one here right now. It's $20. Would you like to buy it? Then they kind of look at you in a moment of panic and go, actually, I didn't realize you were actually going to ask me to buy it. It's probably not for me. The only moment you get the real truth is when you ask for the money, because up until that point, people will be nice to you. So with a business idea, the mini experiment is ask a bunch of people to buy. If they buy, you have a business because you've sold something. Now you've got to deliver it and you can see whether you enjoy it. If they don't buy, ask them why, because there's learning there, and then take that learning and go back round to the beginning and try again. And that's the basic flow of the mini experiments. And then your question was the passion bit. You're sort of layering in passion to this, or passion, energy, excitement, enjoyment, whatever word you want to use. Because I think sometimes people think passion is too grand. Like, it's my one passion. Get over having your one passion for the rest of your life. I enjoy so many things. Like, I love Lego, I love pizza, I love doing podcasts, I love helping people. Like, I have so many passions, I love stuff. You just kind of like pick something you enjoy and try and make money doing it. Do some mini experiments and you'll learn. Some of them will work, some of them will fail spectacularly. And actually, it doesn't matter if it fails if you haven't gone into debt. People think entrepreneurship is risky. People believe like entrepreneurship is risky, and it is. If you borrow $200,000 and tie that against your family home, that's risky, because if you don't sell, you've bet everything. That is risky. My version of entrepreneurship is not risky. Well, it is. You're risking time and energy. And I think you actually get to choose your risk. You can risk money, you can risk time, you can risk energy, you can risk reputation, you can choose your risk. I choose to risk rejection, time, and energy. I do not choose to risk the money my wife and I have built up to look after us in our retirement. I just find that crazy. You asked one question, Christine, and I've gone on about a 20-minute rant about passion and debt and different things. So I'm going to shut up and let you back into the conversation.
No, never stop. It's incredible because there are two points I want to bring up there. One is you had said, if you are selling something and someone doesn't want to buy it, you ask why. But that is also a very tough conversation. I'm in sales, so that is a very tough conversation to have. But I've gotten used to it. And I know just to get out of that comfort zone, ask that question. But people, if they hear, you know, no, thanks, not interested in buying. Okay, thank you. And they walk out the door. But teaching ourselves to say, well, why not? Because that's going to help you get information to be able to turn around and then turn that into a reason to change the product a little bit or to ask more people, why not? And then the second point you brought that I thought was really interesting is multiple passions and not knowing if you had a passion. So Tony, you know, my husband's been listening to your podcast for as long as it's been out. And he would come home every day and he's like, Christine, you have to listen to him. He's going to inspire you. You're going to figure it all out. And I remember saying, but I don't know what I want to do. I don't have an idea of where I want to go. Exactly. And he's like, I'm telling you, listen to this guy. And between you and there's another entrepreneur, her name is Jess Ekstrom. She has a company called Headbands of Hope. And she has also been a huge driver in the reason why I started this podcast, you know, you and Tony, and then Jess, to also have that give back and that cause-driven business behind it. So two great points about how to, you know, get out of your comfort zone, just ask. And then we all have many passions, you're right. And we don't have to hone in on one. We could use that together. Alan, I've taken a lot of your time, but I want to know what's next for you and what's next for the Rebel Business School.
There's a lot going on. There's some fun stuff. So Katie and I are off to Colombia next, which I'm very excited about. And particularly because the Rebel Business School launched in Colombia last November. So in the height of pandemic, we ran our first course in Spanish in Colombia. And I'm going to go down and meet the Colombian team, Daniel, Alfredo and Fabi. And I'm really looking forward to that and some Colombian coffee whilst we chat business.
Of course.
My wife and I have just launched our finance course. So I think we hit financial independence a couple of years ago, which is an incredible state to be in. Basically, that means we don't have to work again if we don't want to. What seems to have happened is we're even more productive since than we were before, but that's a whole nother story. And we want to help other people be able to get in control of their finances. Because I think it's 53% of Americans cannot survive a month without a paycheck. And I find that shocking and scary, given the fact we just had a pandemic and a lot of people's incomes dried up. People are in a mess with their finances and we want to help. And we've been lucky enough to, well, I say lucky, we have focused for a long time on learning how to create an financially abundant life, and we want to give that away. So we've created this course called Rebel Finance School, and it's happening on Zoom around the world for 10 weeks. It's completely free. One of the benefits of reaching FI is we don't need to earn money. So the course is completely free and we're giving it away and doing it together. So we've got that going on. Starts April 26th, 2021. And yeah, Rebel Business School itself is, I think we're in 10 countries and we've helped 11,500 people around the world now, and it's still growing. And then there's the podcast, The Rebel Entrepreneur, which, like, I keep busy, Christine. This is like...
You got a couple things.
People think retirement is boring.
That is so great that you get to say retirement. I mean, I'm going to tell Tony the second I get off the call with you, I'm calling Tony about the school, because that just sounds like something that everybody should attend. And that's, again, maybe with the pandemic, you noticed you can reach such a bigger audience. You don't just have to stick to one town in one room. You can reach across the globe. So that's phenomenal. I mean, good luck in Colombia. Have fun. I will keep up with the Rebel Finance School. I mean, that just sounds incredible. Alan, thank you for all you do. You guys have reached a lot of goals that you have strived for. You have helped a lot of people, including my family and I, to kind of get out of our comfort zone. And I just want to thank you for everything you've done. I am honored that you took some time to chat with me today. You are incredible.
It's my pleasure. And can I be cheeky and leave a closing message for your audience?
Yes, please.
So to everyone listening to Christine's podcast, everything you want in life is outside your comfort zone. Otherwise, you'd already have it. Because if you were comfortable getting what you want, you would have just done it. You know, if you were comfortable, like, it's in my comfort zone, I'll just walk over there and be comfortable and I'll get it. Everything you want is outside your comfort zone. So if you're going to test a business idea, do something new, and you're feeling uncomfortable, I want you now to take the sign of discomfort as you might be heading the right direction towards what you actually want. So my closing message is, please go out there and get a little uncomfortable.